A reading from Exodus, chapter 19, verses 3 through 7, and chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. Then Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all the peoples. Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the Israelites." So Moses came, summoned the elders of the people, and set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. Then God spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Pastor Stacy Swain tells a story of a communion Sunday last year when something unusual happened. In the midst of her sermon, a latecomer arrived walking in a door at the front of the sanctuary. It was Harriet, a woman who had been coming to church for a number of months. Harriet lived on very little income and was sometimes homeless. Pastor Swain describes what happened next. As Harriet entered the sanctuary, the door shut loudly behind her. Several people glanced in her direction. She crossed in the front of the sanctuary and was headed down the center aisle to take a pew. Then the table caught her eye, loaded as it was with communion. Switching up her trajectory, she drew close to the table and began helping herself to the bread. She ate one piece, and then another, and then another. I was still preaching, but the attention in the sanctuary had clearly shifted to Harriet. I felt everyone watching her and wondering what to do. After a couple more minutes at the table, Harriet filled both of her hands with bread, made her way about halfway down the center aisle, and slipped into a pew. I felt the congregation relax, Stacy Swain writes. I was almost finished with the sermon, but then Harriet was up again. She was making her way back to the table for more bread. At this point, one of our deacons, I'll call her Brenda, slipped out of her pew and walked unhurriedly up to the table as well. Standing next to Harriet, Brenda wrapped her arms lovingly around Harriet's shoulders. When Harriet was finished, when she'd had all the bread she needed, they turned together and walked slowly back to the pew, Harriet holding the bread in her hand and Brenda holding Harriet in her arms. Then they slid into the pew, side by side, together. Everyone knows there's a time and a place for communion, right? You only come forward when invited. When it's at that time, you read in the bulletin, communing by intention. And you only take a little bit of bread and dip it in just a little bit of the grape juice or the wine. But Harriet didn't know or follow these unspoken rules. And by the grace of God, Brenda, the usher, met Harriet just as she was, rather than trying to impose an artificial expectation. What strikes me about this story is how Harriet and Brenda demonstrate the heart of communion, even while breaking the so-called rules of communion. Sometimes, beloveds, we can lose a sense of the meaning behind laws or rules or practices. That can be the case with communion, which started out, after all, as a meal with Jesus and a dozen friends. But over the centuries between then and now, it's become vitally important to say just these words, to follow X, Y, and Z in the liturgy, to do this and then this and then this and not that, but to believe this and not that about what happens here. Is it consubstantiation, transubstantiation, a memorial feast, or something else altogether? What? We have a tendency to lose the meaning in the motions. The liturgy of communion can sometimes become calcified until it seems like a Harry Potter incantation that has to be done just right in order for the spell to work. We've lost some sense, then, of what communion fully is. A meal with Jesus and others who follow him. This same tendency to calcify, to make permanent, can be said for the Ten Commandments. There is superstition around this particular list of commands, which we heard read in so many voices across the front of the church. Superstition so much that they are put up in courthouses as omens, or they're put on people's bodies as tattoos, as if making them visible will make those who gaze on them more righteous just by seeing them, or will make the commandments immediately understandable or followable. Barbara Brown Taylor describes how throughout her part of the American South, people like to post the Ten Commandments on lawn signs in their yards. She suggests that every lawn sign facing the street should be turned around to face the house's occupants instead. So the commandments become less of a pious demonstration and more of a daily guide to faithful living as they were originally intended. The Ten Commandments can seem merely like a list of do's and don'ts, mostly don'ts, let's face it, unless we realize that they come in the context, the greater context of God's covenant, which we heard at the very start of today's reading. God says, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of slavery, out of the house, out of the land of Egypt, and out of the house of slavery." That's the covenant with this God, who is described in many different ways throughout Scripture, but again and again as gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. That is the deep meaning, the deep context and purpose behind these commandments. This is a God whose promise of protection, whose covenant of salvation for God's people, is the reality out of which Moses receives the Ten Commandments in the first place. If God's divine love is the underlying principle, then the Ten Commandments can become the policies of that principle. These commandments are ways to live with God and with neighbors in light of the covenant. I will be your God, and you will be my people. The first four of those commandments concern how we relate with God, worshiping God alone, forsaking idols, taking care to honor both God's name and the Sabbath. The other six that follow regard our interactions with one another. Moving from God to society. Because God is love and calls us to love one another, we honor parents. We don't murder or commit adultery or steal, lie, or covet. What we know to be true about God pours forth in our actions with one another. Policies and practices follow the first principle, which is God's covenant to love and to liberate. Some months ago here at Edina Morningside Church, we had a number of members start to wonder aloud and wonder together about our covenant together as a community, particularly in this context of the Roman Catholic Church and the clergy sex abuse there, in the context of the Me Too movement and countless stories of sexual harassment in the workplace. All these became evidence and a suggestion that we as a church don't necessarily have a concrete collective list of core practices for a safer church. How do we offer a safer church environment to the children who are downstairs, to those who gather in this sanctuary, and to the people from Monday through Saturday who pass through our doors? How do we offer a safer church? Now, when this has come up at other organizations or even other churches, there can be a tendency to create a 30-point list, all the doctrine of the do's and mostly don'ts of forming a safer church. It may be that that's on the horizon, and we'll come together to some sense of that. But I'm especially proud that before we got to any of that, we began with the core principle of love, of community, of remembering what calls us together in the first place. So in a moment, we're going to take a look together and speak aloud a draft covenant, a behavioral covenant of how we are to be together, what God might be calling us into, to forming a safer church with one another. Not just in covenant with God from millennia ago, but how God is calling us to form a new covenant with one another here and now. Whatever commandments, if you will, proceed from this covenant will help us live it out in faithful ways. But we start with the most important thing first. We start with naming what is at the core of our identity, our covenant with God, and our relationships with one another. Together, in light of this covenant, and all that will come out of it, we will recognize ways to form a community that continues to be a place that respects each of us who come as we are, as God has made us, calling us to create a community of belonging, rather than just fitting in or conforming. That's, after all, the point of communion in the first place. That's the point that Brenda and Harriet showed us by their example. Come to the table as you are. Come to the church as you are. Come in order to show love for one another, receive love for yourself, and be empowered by God to be sent forth into the world. That, after all, is how Jesus summed up the whole of the commandments. When he was asked, what does this all mean? He summed up the Ten Commandments and the 600 others that are in the Torah, saying, love God and love your neighbor as you love yourself. That is the heart of this covenant. This covenant of love, God's covenant with each of us, and our covenant with one another. So that all may truly feel welcome. All may participate here and everywhere, of every age, background, race, and creed, gathered together worldwide in this communion of Christian faith. By the grace of God. Amen.